This podcast is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Listen to other great tech podcasts at www.techpodcasts.com.
Yo, you are in the right place at the right time, listening to the right thing. Tech Webcast. Congratulations on choosing such an awesome thing to listen to. You are clearly very smart. You're into tech stuff. You love hearing Brad and Jason and their guests chat. And you're probably really good looking too. Well done. So let's get into it. The weekly tech extravaganza that is Tech Webcast. In 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to episode 219 of the Tech Webcast podcast, recorded on Saturday the 15th of December 2012. Tech Webcast is recorded every Saturday and rebroadcast on Aussie Tech Heads on Thursday nights at 7. In today's news, some Facebook privacy changes, telcos roaming charges, and the worldwide policy for the internet. Today's hosts are Brad, Jody, Jason, and Steve, and we have a couple of Klingons. And their guest is Alex Kidman. How are you doing, Brad?
Hey, what's up, mate?
Not too bad.
Couple of Klingons. That's good to hear. Steve and John, what's up, guys? Don't talk all at once. Steve, what's up?
Oh, I'm doing good.
I think John had to go.
Oh, John left?
He had to go look after the kids.
Okay, that's cool. Hey, John, by the way. Good to have you. Good to meet you. Jody, what is up?
Hey, lots of stuff over here in the States, and it's been a day of unusual situations, but as far as my personal situation, all is well here in New Jersey.
All right. Jacob, what's up?
Nothing much. What's up with you?
Nothing much, mate.
Our last show for the year.
Yeah, it is. I was going to do one next week, but Steve's not going to be here, so we'll be back on January.
And neither will I.
No, you'll be away, so I won't be either. So what's up, Jacob, and everyone else?
Do we do a quick news rundown?
Yeah, sure, go ahead, mate, jump in. Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
Telcos will have to warn, news, of course, is from Sydney Morning Herald as usual. Telcos will have to warn consumers of exact mobile charges while they are roaming and provide tools to monitor and manage their usage under new rules proposed on Thursday by the communications regulator. The new draft International Mobile Roaming Standard from the Australian Communications and Media Authority follows reports that complaints about disputed roaming charges increased by almost 70% in the 2011-2012 to more than 4,100. We want the carriers to significantly lift their game on the whole transparency piece to give consumers clear messages at the right time and the right warnings about costs, and also be able to give them the tools they need to actually manage those costs, ACMO member Chris Chia said. We don't think it's that hard and they should be able to do it. Communication Minister Stephen Conroy said Australian consumers were being gouged by telcos and slugged with unacceptable, outrageous charges. The complaints to the Telecommunications Industry Ombudsman include a consumer who bought a $129 monthly plan so she could make calls during a nine-week holiday in Europe, only to return to a bill of $75,000, which subsequently increased to $147,000. An attempt by government to establish a worldwide policy for oversight of the internet collapsed after many Western countries set a compromise plan to gave too much power to United Nations and other officials. Delegates from Australia, the US, UK and other countries took the floor the second but last day of UN conference in Dubai to reject revisions to a treaty governing international phone calls and data traffic. It is with heavy heart and a sense of missed opportunities that the US must communicate that it's not able to sign the agreement in the current form. Facebook says it's changing its privacy controls yet again to make them easier for users to understand. One of the new features, privacy shortcuts, that pop up on the right-hand side of the top of news feeds that answer questions such as who can see my stuff. You can also block someone with one click. Facebook is also rolling out a feature that allows people more easily hide or remove posts that appear on their timeline. Justin Brockman, director of Center for Democracy and Technology's Project on Consumer Privacy, says he thinks it's a positive that Facebook lets users know how to take steps to protect their privacy and make sure their stuff is locked down the way they think it is. And that's the news for today.
And, good news, by the way, Jason, as always.
Of course, as Jody was saying before, Facebook had an outage during the week, which caused a bit of problem for a few people. She's probably got more information on that.
I wasn't affected by it, by the way.
No, I wasn't online at the time, so yeah. I didn't notice.
JD, what's your view on that Facebook?
With the Facebook outage, evidently they had they were doing some kind of DNS switch, and it caused widespread outages, actually. And, you know, there were still residual issues as of today where people felt their photos weren't coming up. They couldn't click like, or if they clicked like, it unliked itself. They couldn't share pictures. So I guess it's part of the growing pains that they have.
I wonder if the new privacy changes rolled out caused some of the problem as well.
Quite possibly.
Mm.
Wouldn't be the first time.
What about you? What's your view on this, Alex, from Gizmodo?
Well, technically, I got to flag myself. I was from Gizmodo. I'm the ex-editor of Gizmodo.
Oh,
also the ex-editor of CNET Australia.
Oh, shit.
I don't want to tread on Luke Hopewell's toes, because whilst he's shorter than I am, he's also significantly stronger.
Oh, okay. But I didn't know that. Sorry.
With regards to Facebook, the outage, it's an outage. Websites go down. And at least they've actually come out and said, look, this is actually what the cause was, not we pissed off someone at Atomic, an Anonymous, and they, you know, they came after us with a big, heavy DDoS axe, or, oh, we're just not going to talk about that. With regards to privacy, for Facebook, they've waffled around privacy for years and years and years now, and I've long held the view that the single best thing you can do regarding your own privacy on Facebook is don't put a single thing on Facebook that you wouldn't want the entire world to see, and you'll never be disappointed.
Yep.
Or good better answer. Yet, don't have a Facebook account.
Yeah. What about you, Jake? What's your view on this?
The Facebook going down, I never got the problem.
Oh, okay. You're lucky. What about you, John?
Well, I never had a problem with Facebook while I was on Facebook. But, you know, the way I look at it is, you know, the press has to make a big deal out of whenever, you know, a highly visible website has availability issues. And I still think that even in a highly available, highly visible site like that has better IT than most, you know, typical users. So, you know, if someone tries to, you know, deploy their own high availability infrastructure, then it's probably still not going to be as good as what Facebook offers.
Yeah, exactly. Right? And John, who are you, by the way?
Oh, yeah. So, well, first of all, I'm the other Klingon on the show.
Welcome.
I'm the Steve's brother, and I'm also an Oracle employee. So I work for one of the richest men in the world, although I never see any of that money. I'm a product manager that works on the Java Enterprise Edition team in Glassfish Server.
Sweet.
Oh, so you're the one who we can blame for the vulnerabilities?
No cop.
Burn.
Wait a second. Where did that come from?
I think Brad said it. Yeah, it wasn't me.
No, blame Jacob. He said it.
Yeah.
All right. Jason, who are we good on today's show, mate, the guest?
Oh, yeah, Alex Kidman. So tell us a bit about what you do in the world of Australian tech journalism and such.
Okay, well, I do a little bit of everything. I'm a freelance tech writer. As alluded to previously, for the first half of this year, I was the editor of the Australian version of Gizmodo. Prior to that, I helped launch the Australian version of CNET locally. But in terms of the Australian tech media, there are very few places that I haven't worked. If you started at the Atomic end and ended up at the ZDNet end, I've worked pretty much everywhere there and in between.
Cool. And you go on the Australian television news at times for current affairs shows?
Typically turning up on the ABC and SBS from time to time, yes.
Yeah. And what are they generally about, gadgets or new technologies or the internet or something?
Yes, he says in a stunning display of detail. Look, I've on TV, I've discussed everything from Apple to Sony's mass PS3 privacy intrusion last year to the death of Steve Jobs through to launches of new products through to explaining mobile broadband, a little bit of everything, but broadly I cover consumer technology more so than stuff at the enterprise end.
What do you think has been one of the biggest technological news stories for this year for Australia?
Biggest tech news story for this year for Australia. I think on the local side of things, the death of the compulsory internet filter was a big one,
yep.
And quite a big victory in pretty much any rational sense of the word. The ongoing story of the NBN is the other obvious big topic. I'm broadly pro the fiber to the home approach, but it's one of those just constant bounce back things, depending on which arm of the media you read, which particular swing you bring into it. I think it's a broadly positive thing, but yeah, the fact that it is still an ongoing story, and let's face it, it's going to be an ongoing story for the next 5 to 10 years.
Yeah, it's difficult to get the point across when you've got opposition trying to come up with any excuse to do whatever is the opposite to the current government, rather than seeing what's good for Australia. It just seems to be, to me, I don't know if you've seen this, that they're just like, well, yeah, that'd be great, but we have to oppose that, so we'll just say a bunch of things that we don't really understand that's the opposite to whatever everybody else wants.
My issue with the opposition's stance has largely been that it has been so relatively incoherent and there hasn't been a whole lot of detail. I do think this is something that's quite important for the Australian economy as an entire thing, not just the cost of the NBN, but the implications for what an NBN can bring to both business and consumer groups. And the real issue, I wrote this up not that long ago actually, the real issue that I've got is the most coherent spokesperson I've got on this is Malcolm Turnbull. He goes in on the attack and he's not always wrong, but they haven't really released any detail about their policy. It makes it impossible to say, well, hang on, okay, NBN Co. gets this bit right, but they get that bit badly wrong, and the opposition plan would fix that. We don't know. We simply don't know, apart from, oh, we'll do fibre to the home, and it'll be faster, and it'll be cheaper, because we promise, not, yeah, here's our plan.
A lot of the stuff that I hear from them is mostly, well, you've got the Wi-Fis and the 3Gs, that's about all you need, so, and it's not really what we need.
It's such an astonishingly ignorant position to kind of argue from, but it's one that as soon as somebody sees, you know, a 4G test that hits like 50 meg, they go, well, wow, we'll just have that and ignore the fact that not only do you need backhaul to service all of that, but of course that's 50 meg for one user on one cell typically. As soon as you start to get lots and lots of people using it, it all starts to collapse, you know, as has been the case quite recently with, as I understand it, with Telstra down in Melbourne, an awful lot of unhappy Telstra users down there. And all the networks have gone through this, Vodafone most famously so.
Yeah, that was another quite big thing that's happened in the last couple of years is Vodafone losing so many customers due to their poor service and support for their networks. Do you see anything improving there in the future?
Vodafone, to their credit, has spent a fair amount of money. They have done a fair amount of work. They've lost an astonishing quantity of customers, and it'll be fascinating to see whether or not, in fact, they can kind of turn that corner back. I've seen figures for Vodafone that have suggested that, yeah, look, it can, you know, there are areas, and it's the same with any telco, really. You always get areas of kind of good coverage and bad coverage, and there are areas where Vodafone really does seem to be clawing its way back up. Now, whether or not it can hold on long enough, keep enough customers on long enough, or if this is in fact a function of they had, you know, so many hundreds of thousands of customers, now they've only, you know, now they've got hundreds of thousands less, so suddenly there's less stress on the network, I don't know. But yeah, I wouldn't say that they're a spent force, and I certainly hope they're not, because frankly, the more telecommunications competition we have in this country, the better, especially given the size and scope of the land.
Alrighty, I'll let Brad hand it over to anybody else who wants to ask questions as well.
Yeah, I have a question for you, Alex. What's your favourite story been so far on Gizmodo and review products, iPhone or whatever? What sort of phone you've been liking for over the past year?
For the majority of the past year, I've tested just about everything. This is what I do, of course.
Yeah.
And there've been a bunch of hands I've been really, really impressed with. My day-to-day phone, I've literally only just swapped over this week from using an iPhone 4S to a Galaxy Note 2.
Oh, wow.
And it's just quite a deliberate thing because for an awfully long time, my position has been that I prefer a smaller phone. I tend to carry a tablet. I may well have a notebook on me as well. And the larger phones, I always just kind of hit that point where I went, why am I not doing this on a tablet? Do I need the phone part of this to do this? And I'm trying to challenge my perception of that by switching over to the Note 2 for a month, seeing how I feel at the end of that month in regards to that kind of size of a device. But there've been a bunch of really quite cool phones certainly this year. I'm a big fan of the Lumia 920.
Mm-hmm.
I think Nokia have done very well there. Wish it was a little bit lighter, but then you've got the HTC 8X, which actually kind of covers that nicely. I liked, and a lot of people seem to be very indifferent towards, the Motorola Razr M, purely because it was a smaller but quite powerful 4G phone.
Cool.
I saw a interesting video today posted on Twitter about a guy who decided to see how much he could use his Galaxy Note 2 as a desktop computer with an HDMI cable, and the things that he was doing on there, running on the four cores and running multiple videos on YouTube plus Office Suite and a few other things, and it seemed to be, he was of the opinion that he could almost use it as his main computer so long as he could just plug it into external devices.
It's one of those kind of nice tech demo things, whether or not that then applies back through to real-world usage. It's nice that you can do it. It's great that you've got the power. And there's an awful lot of this stuff, obviously, that you can kind of do with almost any smartphone platform with a remote client anyway. Mm. I could back into a Windows or Mac box of my choice with just about any phone and get some stuff done, whether or not that then becomes a practical thing of, are you actually benefiting from having this? That's kind of what interests me with that story.
Yeah, though his wasn't remoting back to another machine, though. His was doing it all on the actual Galaxy Note itself.
Yeah, no. I realise that. My point is, while you could do it, are you better off doing it?
Yeah. I suppose it could be good for something portable. If you like, I'll be going on holidays away from most of my technology next weekend to my parents. They don't have internet, they don't have any gadgets or network or anything there whatsoever, so rather than taking my MacBook Pro, if I had something like the Galaxy Note, it would be neat just to be able to plug it into one of Dad's monitors that he's got there and just use that for my main device just to keep in touch with friends and relatives stuff. That would be an interesting way to have your own portable device that's got the internet on it.
Yeah, definitely. All right, good stuff, Jason. John or Jacob or Jody have a question for Alex.
Alex, this is Jody. I just am curious how you got started. You obviously have a great amount of knowledge of tech and gadgets and gizmos. What prompted this whole, you know, experience and how to get started?
Well, technically, it's my wife's fault.
There you go. It's always the woman.
No, I can very happily blame my wife, and she is very happy for me to blame her, because I ended up at university on track to become a history academic, all leather elbow patches and dusty tomes and that kind of thing, and significantly less of the Indiana Jones than I would like, but you get it. And we met, and she was a computer science student, and this is going back a long time. Cast your mind back to the dim, distant past, when at that time, the only university students who had any kind of internet access were computing students. No one else. You simply couldn't do it. And it just wasn't seen as a necessary tool at that point. And I'm really dating myself there. But I was also with her, and that meant that I then got access to very, very early, you know, proto-internet stuff. And I got hooked from there. And that then kind of followed through to me finishing out my degree, landing a job at a doing over-the-phone tech support for a computer company that I won't name because I'll probably start swearing if I do. But it was an excellent grounding, actually, in all the things that people get wrong with computers, all the things that people both don't understand about them, and then the terrible things that people will do to computers. I still shudder to this day. led through into a job managing the website for one of Australia's leading computing magazines. They were very, very early into the game. And from there into writing. And I've been doing it now for the past 16-odd years.
Oh, good stuff. Awesome. All right, Jacob, question?
Yeah, I was just wanting to know any weird news stories that you found over the time?
Past 16 years, how many hours have you got?
No, like recently.
Oh, recently. What have I hit that's been particularly awe-inspiring or... I've got to admit, I'm drawing a mental blank, which is a terrible thing for a journalist to have to say, especially a professional writer, but there's nothing that jumps to mind that's astonishingly kind of funny, quirky.
I thought of something weird, and this has happened in Australia. How about the Apple Maps putting the people out in the desert thing? Do you remember that one?
This is to do with Apple Maps coverage of Mildura, and there's kind of to my way of thinking, there's a couple of different stories. I should point out, by the way, they were not out in the desert. They were in the middle of a national forest.
Yeah, I know.
But that said, the two things that fascinated me about that story were the fact that people get so blindly reliant on just a GPS, and especially a GPS that's reliant itself on a mobile connection. I personally think it's daft, and I've driven through that part of Australia countless times. There's all sorts of road signs, and I genuinely don't quite get how they got all these signs saying, hey, look, Mildura's this way. No, look, Mildura, it's that way. Mildura, it's that way. And how they didn't quite get there. But from later examination, it appears as though while they got complaints about it, there was only actually one person who managed to go the whole way into the center of this particular forest area. Part of the cause there as well was that after getting some of their data there from the Commonwealth map, which designated Mildura as an area as well as a city. So it'd be like the difference from a US perspective. It'll be like the difference between saying that New York, the city, is New York, the state.
Definitely. Alex, have you had much to do with T-Bell Australia over the past few years? What's been going on with them?
It seems as though they've just been kind of quietly and slowly vanishing, which is a pity.
Yeah.
But a decent platform. And it's certainly, in free-to-air terms, it's probably the best that we've got so far.
Yeah, definitely. All right. Steve, any questions? John, question? I know you got a question for Alex. John?
Yeah, this is John. So I used to be an iPhone 4 user and, kind of being a Java guy, I liked what was happening in the Android market, right? A lot of the apps are moving on over to the Android operating system. There's a lot more flexibility for vendors to kind of try different innovative things and see what works in the market and what doesn't. So I actually moved over to a Galaxy Note, not the Note 2, but the original Note at the time. And it's got a lot of pros and cons, right? And it's kind of the situation of, you know, being a guy, I don't really carry around anything with me. I just stick a phone in my pocket. So it's the situation of, you know, is that a Galaxy Note in your pocket? Or are you happy to see me? Right? It's really big. And so the question is, you know, with your Galaxy Note 2, how practical is it for your typical, you know, guy just walking around to stick it in the pocket? Or is that one of those things that really don't work well for a male or, you know, maybe a female that has a purse or something that's big enough to fit something of that profile, right, with the dimensions?
Well, so far, my observation would be it kind of depends on which pair of pants you put on in the morning and what you're doing that day. I've walked around with it in a pair of jeans and not massively noticed that it's, you know, hugely bigger than a wallet. It is a big phone. There's no denying that. But I don't think it's a totally impractical solution in those circumstances. Equally, though, I've wandered around in a pair of shorts and been aware as I've been, you know, sitting down or standing up, oh, there's a phone there. Not only is it, you know, close to my nearest and dearest, but it's also relatively more likely to fall out of my pocket. That's a concern. It's, to a certain extent, I think it does come down to a bit of personal preference, and I'm always in favor of having a little bit of choice. I'm still sitting on the side of the fence, and I've only done the switch this week. I'm still sitting on the side of the fence where I say that the Note is a bit impractically large. But yeah, talk to me again in 3 weeks and I might have a different view. I know people who absolutely adore the fact that it's got a bigger screen than, you know, an iPhone 4 or a 5 or even something like the Galaxy S3.
Do you have any opinions? Have you tried out the new Windows 8 and do you think Microsoft is heading in a good direction with this?
Operating system or phone?
Either, both.
Both. Okay. On the phone side, I think Windows Phone 8 is an excellent operating system for a certain subset of users. I really wish they'd kind of get cracked in certain cases. And there's some stuff that personally doesn't excite me in the way that I want to use a phone, but it's a nice option to have. And there's some nice new handsets. A little bit wary given given what's happened to Windows Phone 7 users with the whole Windows Phone 7.8. Yeah, maybe, maybe not. Windows 8 itself, again, I think it's a nice, elegant touchscreen operating system. If you're not on a touchscreen, it's a little bit, I would say, a little bit more work than most people really probably want to do. But having said that, for the moment, the way they've actually priced it in an upgrade sense, it's not a bad investment per se.
Yeah, I saw a something mentioned recently from Microsoft saying it only takes a couple of weeks before you're comfortable with Windows 8, so it's not that big of a deal in their opinion.
Well, I didn't say that. They're unlikely to say, well, look, really drop the ball on this one. Nobody, please, just don't buy it. Because when they have done this, they'll just very quickly sweep it out of the market and make sure that you can't buy it. Look, yeah, there's a learning curve. There's always a learning curve with a new operating system. The thing, I think, with Windows 8 is that it's so built around the modern interface. The modern interface is what makes it make sense. And not everyone needs that, and especially if you're outside the touch environment, it makes slightly less sense. They've also done curious things. They're very reluctant to kind of talk about Windows RT and where that and why they've kept desktop in there. I think there's a little bit of a confused story in there. It's almost like one of those products where you kind of feel if they'd given this 6 months more, or if someone at the top had said, no, you'll do this this way and this that way, they might have something that was even stronger in pack. Who knows, over the pack or two, we might have. It's certainly, you know, it happened in the case with Vista, that Vista started out as an absolute dog of an operating system, but at the end of its service life, it was fairly reasonable.
Yeah. John, do you have anything?
Yeah, Alex, quick question for you. So if you put your time machine hat on, 3 years from now, where do you see the market at relative to like iOS versus Android versus Windows 8? What do you think it's going to look like?
Okay, prediction's always a dangerous game. But having said that, I suspect that within 3 years, Android will have... In the smartphone space, I'll restrict myself to that because I don't want to do something that's in the smart. Within 3 years, Android will have a fairly dominant numbers game behind it, but up as it always is with Android, with having multiple vendors, Apple will probably still be getting the lion's share of the profit because, frankly, they get a stack of profit out of it, and I'm not sure that that's actually going to change in as short a span of time as 3 years. Give it maybe 5 years, yeah, I think we might see a shift there. But Apple are fairly strongly reactive to this stuff, and Apple's done a fairly good job at courting developers relative to the amount of money they make on the platform, not just what the platform, Apple's considerably more open in that aspect, but in terms of issues relating to piracy, in-app purchases, that kind of thing, a fairly strong job of that, and therefore they may well be the ones, even though their market will shrink, taking home the vast majority of the cash. Windows Phone, what platform, I think they're going to struggle to get large traction in that market, but it's always good to have that kind of alternative out there. And 3 years, I would say that the only likely to see is BlackBerry.
Do you see the? Sorry, actually, one follow on. Do you see the fragmentation of the Android markets impacting Android adoption, or do you think it really just doesn't matter?
I think the fragmentation of the market doesn't matter when it comes to adoption. When it comes to people picking up these devices, there's so many form factors, so many stuff. Want something like a Note 2, you can have it. If you want a cheap and cheerful little Huawei handset, you can have that too. So no, in terms of people picking up the devices, no. Where it's going to have that end effect is in the apps that you can get for it and how quickly they develop. And this is one of the areas where, whilst there are small levels of fragmentation between Retina and non-Retina, for example, in the app, there's significantly less. So it's easier for developers to say, right, well, we've got one, maybe two versions, not, well, we've got 15 versions. You jump phone to phone, and I do this all the time. Obviously, I've just done this with the Note 2. The last time I used an Android phone for a considerable period of time was using the Galaxy S2. And so obviously I've got a reasonable bank of apps there. And I'm looking at them on the Note 2, and there's a reasonable number that simply come up as Note won't work on this device.
Apple does have a lot of different devices and sizes, screens and stuff, but they seem to manage it better than Android ever does.
He's breaking up really bad. So let's just move on. Steve, what do you think about all this?
Well, just mentioning what a little bit what Alex said. Well, actually, I think Jason said that Apple seems to be keeping up with their, since Apple's got more devices. Of course, with the iPad Mini, they kept the resolution the same, which helped developers not having to change your software. You could pretty much use the same apps from the, you know, iPad.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, on the iPad Mini without changing anything. And of course, that's I think one of the best things that they've done to help prevent like fragmentation and all that.
Yep. So, John, what sort of device do you have in your, do you use each day, phone-wise and tablet?
Well, so for tablet, I actually have the Vizio V-Tab, 8-inch tablet that I got for, you know, $100, which is why I got it. And the interesting thing there is it's like really underpowered, in my opinion, for, you know, what it does. But for $99, it's okay. My day-to-day use is the Galaxy Note, which is almost an 8-inch tablet anyway.
That's cool.
I like it.
You know, you should still Steve's iPad or Boxy Box off him. Do you ever do that?
I've got a Boxy. I got two Boxy Boxes.
Oh, you do? Oh, wow. Good stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Good stuff, mate. Jacob, any questions?
No, but we got an audio track.
Do you mind if I play this for a minute? Jacob made us a clip, so we're going to play this, okay? So here we go. We'll be back in one sec. We're back. Hang on. We'll play this, all right? Just hang on. Here we go. I'll play it. Here we go.
It's with me and Brad.
Here we go. That was the there was an app called Strung. You should get it. It's really cool. Really good app. Alex, you back there? Yeah. You can do all different effects and stuff. It's really cool. So, Alex, are you back there yet, mate? Or
I am back here as well as my internet connection will hold up for it. Sometimes I think it's actually not so much a phone, a bunch of Macs strung together, and when they're flat, the right good, but then inevitably one of them gets tired.
Oh, okay.
Still cutting out.
Yeah.
Are you on 3G or something cool?
A pitiful appropriation of ADSL.
Okay. Yeah, that app was called Strung, Jason, if you want to check that out. It's a really, really good app, but I shouldn't really swear on it. But
right.
But anyway.
Cut that out of the show.
Yeah, I'll cut that bit out. Good app. Check it out. It's called Strung. It's a really fun app to use for the iPhone and iPad. Really good. Jason, what's your highlight been so far for this year for the Tech Webcast?
I think we had some pretty cool guests on, like Robert and those.
Yeah, Robert Scoble, and we've had...
he's always fun to talk to.
Oh, he's cool.
But interesting insights.
Oh, definitely. I agree. What about you, Steve? What's your highlight been?
You talking about highlight?
Yeah, mate.
Actually, just the weekly guests, I guess. There's just so many developers.
Yeah, definitely, mate.
It was a shame I missed out on the Tom Merritt episode.
Oh, Tom Merritt, he's a cool dude. He was good to talk to. And what about you, Jody?
Well, it's been somewhat of an auspicious year because I just joined Tech Webcast this year. So
was it? I thought it was last year.
Yeah, was it last year?
No, I can't remember. I don't know.
Well, I've been with you this whole year then. Regardless, I'm really excited about being part of the team, and I've enjoyed a lot of the episodes we've done. I think for people who listen to the show, they'll see how it's grown over the time. Had some really great guests on, and especially working with you, Brad, with you, Jason.
Oh, good.
And Steve, it's been awesome.
Yeah, more to come next year. Alex, do you do many podcasts, mate?
Not enough. Probably a little bit more radio, like straight, you know, commercial and radio podcast stuff. And there's a few irons in the fire in that regard. But
good stuff, mate. Stay tuned. Okay, where can they get you on Twitter and stuff? And that's a good.
And those radio stations, give them a plug.
Yeah, give them a plug. Yeah, give them a plug. Yeah.
I've got to be, as a freelancer, I've got to be really careful on who I do or don't plug, because invariably I don't mention someone and they get really, really ticked off with me. But you can find me at Alex Kidman.
All right.
You can find me at www.alexkidman.com. On YouTube, you can find my series 30 Seconds of Tech at youtube.com/loathsomeleopard, all one word. Don't ask me to explain that. It's way too long a story. And
we just understand you hate Apple products, so...
Well, he reviewed and he unboxed the iPhone 5 and did the Siri test.
Snow Leopard, which was the worst? Just kidding.
I hate all products equally until I've had a chance to use them, and then I truly, truly despise them. Everyone, and then that's all good.
All right. John, where can I get you on Twitter, on the internet, mate?
On the internet, it's just Jay Klingon.
All right.
On Twitter.
All right. Have you got any bad things to say about Steve?
You know what? We'll need another podcast for that one.
Okay. Steve, what do you want to say to that?
Bring it on. No, just kidding. Bing, bing, bing. No, just kidding.
All right. You can get me on Twitter at Brad Owls and Tech Webcast. Steve, where can I get you, mate?
Twitter's chatterbox_live and justin.tv/LinuxCoolDude.
And Jody?
Oh, you remembered me. You can find me on Twitter as
Sons. Don't forget me.
Oh, my God.
And you can find me pretty much everywhere else as either Jody Rains or webmarcom.net.
Oh, and by the way, blame Jake because he wanted to play that audio clip. Jake, where can I get you on Twitter, mate?
JazzBot326691Z, and you forgot to ask me what was my highlight.
Oh, yeah, what was your highlight? Sorry.
Meeting you.
Oh, my God.
Hey.
All right. Okay, Jody, what was your highlight?
Being part of the team.
Oh, that's right. You were too.
I'm on the internet too.
Yeah.
At Warlock on Twitter, WAULOK. Thanks,
that's right. Sorry, mate.
It's okay. You remember Jody. That's
go follow him on Twitter and Jody.
That's all that matters.
And Jacob, plug the other. Jason. Jacob, plug the other show, mate.
Ah, Techluster.
Yeah, plug it. Talk about it for a minute, will you?
Oh, that's our other. That's our good old tech show.
Amazing.
You can watch us on Tuesday nights at 10 p.m. Eastern.
Yeah, we had on last week.
Derek Ross.
From Android, from the Android podcast. All right, is that it, yay. Jason? Want to say before we go, mate?
Merry Christmas and Happy New Year. We'll catch you next year, everyone. Merry Christmas, yeah. Bye.
Do you have any Christmas music, Steve, to play out or not?
Oh, shoot. Nothing ready.
I don't worry about it. Thanks. You lost the game, Jacob, Steve, and everyone else didn't lose the game. Thanks, Alex. You're a legend, mate. The latest, most up-to-date, important tech news that affects you from Australia and the world. A weekly podcast available each Friday through iTunes. Watch the live stream recording of the show at live.thesecrethub.com each Thursday night, 7:30 p.m. or GMT plus 10. Call in live via Skype or chat in our lounge. However you get us, just make sure you do. Listen or visit our website for more information, www.aussietechhead.com.au. Aussie Tech Head. Australia's longest running tech news podcast.
Well, that's it for Tech Webcast this week. Thank you for tuning in. We hope you enjoyed having your mind expanded. Tune in next week for more tech talk with Brad, Jason, and whatever crazy guest they've managed to rope in. Don't forget to get the Tech Webcast app from iTunes. Follow us on Twitter at Tech Webcast, and of course, check us out on Facebook too. Until next time, may the tech be with you. Peace!